In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. Stay tuned.
یکی از ویژگی‌های ما انسان‌ها مقایسه کردن است. چرا؟
One of the main features of humans is making comparison. This is because we are social beings. Humans are not like animals that do not have the comparing power. For animals, same food in the same place does not differ. Humans are different since they consider lower or upper level for themselves. They are also differentiated based on being a believer or non-believer.
ما چون یه موجود اجتماعی هستیم با هم زندگی میکنیم خواه نخواه تو زندگیمون مقایسه میاد.
Since humans are a social being, they live together and making comparison among them is inevitable. The comparison that a human makes could be on different levels of education, wealth, beauty, and social status. However, making comparison is like a double-edged sword. It could cause both tranquility or calmness and anxiety in one's life. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. To find out more about this program, log on to our website www.parstoday.com/Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints. I'm Ata, the host of this program. With me in the studio for today's discussion are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Brother Habib and Sayyid Mohsen. Assalamu alaikum to both of you.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
So, an interesting question, especially for those who are interested in religion and religious concepts, and that is the concept of compulsion in religion. There is still a misunderstanding among the believing people, even in the world of Islam. Nowadays, I could see it in the so-called broad-minded intellectual Sayyid Mohsen referring to one part of the verse of the Quran, 256, you know, like Rafid Din. There is no compulsion in religion, and they try to give their own interpretation. So, when there is no compulsion in religion, why am I being converted to Islam, or why am I being at all called a Muslim of course, the deen has to be defined over here. What is it? What's your answer to that, brother?
Well, la ikraha fi deen is before you become a Muslim.
Okay.
This verse, this part of a verse, la ikraha fi deen, is before you become a Muslim. There is no compulsion in the religion. Obviously, you judge the religions, okay, and then you accept. Once you have accepted Islam, then obviously this verse does not have any application on the Muslims.
The problem is with this accepting mechanism. When you are born into a Muslim family, what is the accepting mechanism over here?
All right, there you need to, obviously, there is no, you have to study.
You know, generation after generation.
The mechanism okay, for the Muslims, I said this in the beginning of the discussion as well, that Allah talks about tafakkarun, ta'akhilun. He talks about getting knowledge. And he, obviously, Islam is against following anything blindly.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. But la ikraha fi deen, number one, is there are different aspects of this. Number one is for those who are non-Muslims, who are looking for the right path, and they're searching for it. And then once they have decided that, okay, Islam is the right path, and they accepted Islam,
okay,
now they're entered into the Islam.
Okay.
Now for them, before that, yes, there wasn't any ikraha.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't any compulsion,
yes,
like there wasn't any sword or anything like to accept Islam. This is the wrong way of,
mm-hmm,
you know,
converting people
yes, into Islam. This is the wrong way.
Okay.
So this is not the way, number one. Number two, once you have entered the Islam, obviously there are specific rules.
Okay.
Let me just give an example. Like, for example, if you want to travel, you decide to travel to any country in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to the, for example, UAE,
yes,
for example,
yes,
Arab Emirates, if you go like UAE,
yes,
there they have their own rules.
Okay.
You cannot just go to the cannot go to the seaside the way,
yes,
you go in Brighton, for example, in
yes,
UK,
okay,
or in any other country. There is a specific rule.
Okay.
So before you're deciding to enter to a country for spending your summer holidays or vacations, you have a multiple choice.
Of course, we are not.
There is no compulsion on you.
Go where they have, yeah, the summer vacation in
UAE.
But once
segregation between male or female, why not? But anyway,
it's been recently attacked by the Yemen Houthis. You know, why not? Was that it?
So basically, even if someone enters the Pakistan or maybe like Iran or some Islamic countries,
yes,
there are some compulsions. They have,
okay,
to obviously be bound
by
the
rules,
yes,
and the laws
by the
over
rules.
There, okay?
Even someone who's traveling to US, for example, or
okay,
to UK,
yes,
there are specific rules. There are traffic rules, there are different rules,
okay,
for the immigrants.
So where do you want to get to, brother?
So the problem is, like, when we talk about like Rafidin, there's a misconception about it,
mm-hmm,
that they put this in every aspect of their life.
Uh-huh.
That is wrong.
Okay.
There is a limitation of this verse. That's the first thing. The second thing is for the Muslims, as you said, like for them who are born in a Muslim family, what should they do? Number one, they should learn about their own language, their own
religion. Okay.
That is necessary. And, you know, the problem is because the parents are illiterate,
mm-hmm,
in the religious sense. Because they're illiterate, that's why their generations are illiterate.
Okay.
We can see, like, in the Islam, they say, like, when the boy becomes 15 years old, he's baligh.
Mm-hmm.
Or the girl in the 9 years old, she's baligh. And in the book of rules, we read that the girl or boy who becomes baligh, they should choose a mujtahid, a person, a jurist, and they should select it and do taqlid. Now, does that boy or girl have this capability,
mm-hmm,
or capacity of knowing about a jurist,
okay,
or making a kind of judgment out of it?
Yes.
Obviously, it depends on their training, how they were grown. It all depends on them. Our issue is because the parents themselves do not have enough knowledge of religion. That's why this is not being conveyed to the next generations.
Okay.
And that's the main issue. There is no issue in being born in the religious family or the Islamic family and following Islam.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's because of our parents.
By force, okay. Okay, like of a deen.
I kind of disagree.
Is this deen Islam?
Yes.
Is it?
Religion.
Religion.
No, okay, it's not Islam.
You brought
it's
it forward,
Islam.
No problem. It's about Islam precisely. This verse
is
talking about Islam, it's talking,
yes,
about Quraysh, it's talking about the Kuffar during that time,
mm-hmm,
right? And of course, the religion of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is Islam. What is the meaning of Islam? Submission to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Mm-hmm.
It's the religion of Moses, of Abraham. It's a submission to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And one of the main things to submit to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is to submit to the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, to submit to his successor Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, and who comes after him, salawatullahi wa sallam alayhi. The thing is, I kind of disagree. Why did you separate between it's compulsory for Muslims and not compulsory for non-Muslims. The verse is talking only about kafir, or about, it's talking towards the kuffar. It's talking towards the kuffar. It's saying la ikraha fi din. It doesn't have to do anything with the Muslims here. I think that we should talk more about what is the meaning of compulsory that you guys are trying to say. Mm-hmm. What is the meaning of force?
Yes.
Do you mean al-hurriya or freedom in the sense that there is no, for example, effects? If I disagree with Islam, then that really goes back to how about inheritance? Mm-hmm. When a kafir cannot inherit from a Muslim.
Yes.
How about the laws that say about al-jihad al-ibtida'i and the difference between yes. the scholars available and the sayings available? So what I want to say here is that there are laws available out there that contradict with the fact that there is no compulsory, that the meaning of compulsory that yes. I want to put forward, right?
Okay.
So I think here, and especially with the sayings of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam that explain it, especially with the Mufassirin state themselves, the meaning of this verse is not, it's not saying that you don't force people. Mm-hmm. It says there is no force. There's a big difference between the two.
Yes.
When you order someone to not force someone,
yes.
it's obliging you to not fight him. It's obliging you to not... it's obliging you to allow him mm-hmm. to spread his beliefs and whatnot mm-hmm. and whatnot, to inherit, to do this and that, everything that has to do with his freedom of religion. Mm-hmm. No, it's not like that. It's telling you that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has created human beings with the free will to choose the religion.
Okay.
This and various verses state this, that if you guys want to really, إِنَّ هَدَيْنَهُ النَّجَدَيْنَ يَا أَخِي, my brother, you want to follow this, this is the religion, this is the right rule, this is the right way. Okay. You want to follow it or not, that's up to you. But whatever happens at the aftermath, it's on you. It's your fault. In this sense, yes. Therefore, if the...
And you mean that out of their free will and determination, they will automatically choose the religion of Allah because of the fitrah?
Yes, that's available. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has placed the
We'll get to that later.
Yeah, we'll get to that later.
Okay.
But the thing what I want to say here is that it's telling human beings, it's sensing them, it's telling them that, it's telling the Prophet that if you rip your clothes, you
yes.
try to bring mountains, you break mountains, you do whatever you can. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, it's their choice.
Okay.
They're going to choose. It's up to them. We haven't created you in a manner where you're a Muslim or you're a kafir.
Okay.
We have created you in a manner that you choose.
Mm-hmm.
You pick Islam, you pick the religion that you want to follow,
yes.
or you don't pick. That's up to you. But at the end of the day, there comes situations where Islam is a government.
I couldn't understand where you're different like from what I explained. We explained the same thing.
Yeah.
That before you become a Muslim, obviously you have a choice. There is no pressure.
Even after Islam. Sorry, I'm talking about free will here.
What about
the verse is talking about free will? It's not talking about how we deal with non-Muslims, how we preach Islam. That's
brother,
what I want to
brother
say.
Brother Habib,
what about the
that revelation and place of revelation of these words? I mean, that some of the children of Ansar, you know, the fathers used to force them into convert into the religion of Islam because they were interested in Christianity, and then come to Prophet Muhammad, and Prophet Muhammad answered, says that there is no compulsion in religion.
Where is that saying?
Isn't it saying?
No, I'm asking you.
Well,
you're the one that brought it up.
Where's
the saying available? Where's
the reference?
Reference. Okay, the reference.
That's the thing.
Yeah, I will bring the reference, man. No
while
problem.
You're looking for the reference, I want to go back to say it.
I was just giving an example.
Like before Islam, huh? Because
yeah.
I understand.
It was just example. Like it wasn't just example that, yes, before Islam, there is obviously you have a free will to choose whatever. But once you have chose one thing, obviously you have to follow some rules.
You can't say that. What you're trying to say is that you can't say that you're a Muslim and therefore
still,
not follow Islam.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, all right. I'm cool with that.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry.
The reference is Al-Mizan, volume number 2, page 348.
That's not a reference. I'm sorry to tell
you
that.
In Majma' al-Bayan Tabrisi also. And
that's
John
also
Mubayan.
Not a reference. I'm sorry to
so
tell
what,
you that as well.
What other reference?
Just read the whole narration. What do you have here?
The narration.
Maybe you translated it wrongly.
No. It's not translated wrong. I've seen it.
No. It is saying that some people from Ansar, the children, especially the sons, you know, were trying to convert into the religion of Islam because they were under the influence of two preachers of Christianity on that time through a storytelling and this and that. So, and the fathers were interested into converting them into the Islam. So they come to Prophet Muhammad and they ask him, what must we do? And says there is no compulsion of religion. Mm. And this is the Sha'an al-Nuzul of that ayah. So this... Okay,
yeah.
whatever possible, I do want to say first, if this is the case, too, first of all, the audience of this verse might be the youth or the young and this and that. And the second is that when we say there is no compulsory religion, it means that let them be free, automatically they will see the beauty of Islam and they convert into the religion of Islam. This is the case that happened at the time of Prophet Muhammad to most of his companions too,
isn't it? There is one thing which is like missed over here. When we are talking about the Ansar becoming Muslim, and obviously, you know, at that time there was a father and son, the whole family.
Yes, yes.
Maybe the father only converted into Islam.
Okay. Exactly.
And the children might be under the influence of maybe Christians or the Jews. Or
their families, their uncles.
It's like not the child who is born within the Islamic family. There's a difference.
So, no.
We need to differentiate between these two things. One is, a child is born into the Muslim family.
Okay.
Once there is the family from whom the father only have chosen, like the Islam. And and the rest haven't done it.
Yes.
And on the other hand, we have like the way you were portraying the things, like you were trying to explain the things. The Prophet has said, like everyone has been born on the fitrah.
Okay.
And there is no Masihi Yahudi or La Nasrani and Wala Yahudi, and there are no Christian or Jews. But on the other hand, obviously, we say that if a child has been born within the Islamic family, obviously he's a Muslim.
Okay.
Now he has to research about the religion first and then. And we cannot just put a ruling that he has become, for example, a Christian, or he has become an atheist, or maybe he has a question. And that's another issue within our Muslim families.
That's right.
That, for example, when kids have such a question, we need to give their answers. It is not necessary that they have become atheist. They might have some questions from their schools, but they have discussions with the teachers or the other other friends they have. So that's that always like that also goes back to the problem that we have in parents, that they are not literate in the religious sense.
Yes.
Because they haven't studied the religion themselves, that's why they're unable to answer. And then we have these issues in the West that we have today. Brother Habib, if you have something to
say. Okay, we are done with the time. One more final moment.
He has something to say.
1 minute.
I wanted just to summarize what he was saying. He was saying that in this saying, first of all, let's prove its reference, right?
Yes. Okay.
If it's available, okay, come over here. Who says that this father has had enough? He's coming to, talk to the Prophet to take his advice. What do I do? I did this. I told him this about Islam. I told him this. At the end of the day, he doesn't want to believe in Islam. What should I do?
Okay.
So the Prophet says, there's no compulsion in religion. You can't force someone to believe in something. There's a difference between the way you stated it and the way that I stated it.
Sorry, but the case is that at least there must be some reference to some facts during the history for the revelation of such verses of the Quran, isn't it?
If you follow my program, Quran Quest, you would see a lot of things that I state over there. One of the things that I state is that revelations of the verses have been limited to some extent. Some of them, some of the sources are weak. Some of the sources are, contrast with the verse and the meaning of the verses that the Mufassirin state. And that is why it's kind of limited. So we reached to a point that it's not necessary to know every reason of revelation, although it is helpful, but it's at the end of the day, it's not a necessary.
So I mean, finally, this ayah, I mean, this part of the ayah, La Ikraha Fid Din, must open the gates for the people in order to do more research about the religion of Islam out of the free will and determination.
Yes, they have free will.
They have free will.
You chose this path.
Okay.
And therefore, the aftermaths of it, it's your fault.
See, there are so many questions that if the new ideas are coming up in the Muslim world by some, it is opposed by some other Muslims in a very, barbaric, violent forms, okay? That if you, for example, ask new questions or bring new doubts, you're going to be killed or something like that, okay? I don't want the answer to that.
I believe this.
Okay.
I've never seen the Prophet, nor the Imam, alayhi wasalam, in a saying, rebuke or criticize someone for asking something. For asking something, and look, I say asking, they truly want to know what's right and what's wrong.
Okay.
I'm not saying what they're asking and they're trying to make fun of the Imam or trying to make fun of the religion of Islam, like how some atheists used to do. Philosopher atheists used to sit down in Mecca. Yes.
Yes.
So I have never seen the Prophet, nor the Imam alayhim as-salam, nor the companions of the Imam alayhim as-salam do such a thing, nor have I seen scholars from the Imamiyyah, right? So at the end of the day, you should tell that to some other sects of Islam. Not us.
Okay,
not us. Okay.
Us means
Shia. Yeah.
Okay, thank you much, Brother Habib and Sayyid Mohsen,
you're
for presence in the program. viewpoints talking about compassion in the religion of Islam. It's very kind of you. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website, apostoday.com/Ian Call of Islam page. Also, our YouTube channel, Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
The same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I when I have you? To doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know, amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. Guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong in the world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth. A good many women who have reached a level of freedom and education in Iran are afraid that they will be forced to return a reactionary religious regime. What have you to say to put their minds at ease? Imam replies, Islam has given women freedom. It is this government and this Shah that have deprived them of freedom and have restricted them in every aspect. January 5th, 1979.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Welcome to the program Spring of Truth from IRB English Radio. This is your host Sayyid Mohsin Naqvi. We are with the viewpoints of Imam Khomeini in regards to the search of Islam in this program. The part of the speech that we have today, in this part Imam Khomeini has said that we want Islam to rule and Islamic decrees to be implemented in this country. Now, we know that Imam Khomeini was the leader of Islamic Revolution and he overthrew the kingdom of the Pahlavi family, and therefore he took over with the revolution when he had the country in his hands. He said that we want Islam to rule and Islamic decrees to be implemented in this country. Means that no matter whoever comes, he must follow the Islamic rule. He must implement the Islamic decrees. He must be the one who thinks about Islam, who gives importance to the Islam. In his life, the Islam has a big role, basically, in his character, in his life, in his leadership. So basically, no matter whether it is the Imam Khomeini himself or someone else, the main point is, in this country, the revolution was done in order to have the Islamic decrees, in order to have Islam, and in order to have the ruling of Islam over this country. Country which has the Islamic ruling in it, it must have justice in it, because according to the teachings of the Quran emphasizes on the justice for everyone. And this is what Islam actually is about. We can see there are many Islamic countries, many, many Islamic countries like in the East, but they do not have Islam ruling those countries. But still, there is a dictatorship. There is a capitalism, there is other kinds of system that are ruling those countries. Islam is not ruling. Yes, the ruler may be the Islamic. The president or the ruler or the king may look someone who is a Muslim, but it is not Islam. Therefore, Imam, in the very first days of the revolution, has emphasized that, remember, that if you do revolution, if you are a Muslim, let Islam rule the country, not the people, because if people will rule without following the Islamic rules or decrees, then obviously there will be injustice, there will be the problems that we can see in today's world. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Economic divide.
The US dollar has remained the world's top currency when it comes to trade, but its standing is increasingly coming under threat. Countries like Iran, China, and Russia are giving it a run for the money. But will they be successful? I know we have covered this topic before, but this edition of Economic Divide will definitely have some surprises for you. Coming up in this program, we will take a look at the Russia-China alliance to dethrone the dollar. It will decrease trade in dollars, and at this point, the dollar use between the two has fallen below 50% in terms of the greenback's bilateral trade value. Next, we will take a look at Iran's push for de-dollarization, a sweeping economic and security partnership deal with China, billions of dollars of Chinese investments in energy and other sectors, and also one with Russia. And finally, we will take a look at the dollar and central banks. The dollar reserve currency is on the decline, as the global reserve currency of central banks in terms of the dollar amount has declined to 59%. That's the lowest level in 25 years. ¶¶
Iran's push to break away from the dollar began a long time ago, but it has gathered steam with the current administration headed by President Ebrahim Raisi. Enhanced cooperation with neighbors has been at the forefront of President Raisi's foreign policy, and that puts the economy at the left, right, and center.
His trip to Russia is meant to cement ties. Remains to be seen whether the 20-year agreement between the two countries will be signed or not.
This deal covers political, security, military, defense, and economic cooperation. Iran's economy has been picking up steam recently. The value of Iran's non-oil trade with its neighbors stood at $36.8 billion during the first 9 months of 2021. That is a 42% increase year-on-year. So significant that it has placed a strain on Iran's infrastructure, like its transport sector. Iran sees it as a necessity to eliminate the dollar from its bilateral trade with these countries. The current trade with Russia takes place in national currencies. Another example, Turkey. 30 to 40% of trade is also done in national currencies, with the rest in euros. Major export destinations of Iranian non-oil goods were Iraq, Turkey, the United Arab Emirates, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Russia, to name a few. Iran has also laid the groundwork for its other mega deal to take place, namely the 25-year cooperation agreement with China, aimed at strengthening economic and political ties. Iran just announced that its agreement has entered an implementation stage. The agreement was signed last year and includes economic, military, and security cooperation.
In this trip, we agreed to start implementing the 25-year Comprehensive Strategic Cooperation Agreement. I also delivered a written message from our president to his Chinese counterpart, Mr. Xi, to implement the agreement.
U.S. sanctions imposed in 2018 bar trade using the dollar system, limiting Iran's ability to conduct imports and exports, slowing its economy further on top of a ban on oil exports.
Okay, our social media section is here, and we're going to take a look at how countries like Russia and China and Iran are steering away from the dollar like never before. It's actually a process that has been going on for quite some time. A top advisor looking at this particular tweet of the Russian President Vladimir Putin has made that issue very clear. China and Russia should avoid using U.S. dollars in financial transactions to minimize Washington's ability to bully other countries into following its rules with the threat of sanctions. Danny says the de-dollarization of the world will no longer be a legend or a dream. Soon, it will come. Now, he says only the global digital currency is the leader and rulers of the world currency in the real future. Now, speaking of the global digital currency, here we have Russia and China, who are keen to cut their dependence on the U.S. dollar for some time. They are close to establishing what they announced, a new system for direct yuan ruble settlements. This will then help countries like Iran in their push for de-dollarization. But things are moving quickly. First, the Iranian foreign minister visited China to make sure the infrastructure is in place for Iran-China for their 25-year pact, of which they did, and they announced the implementation stage for this.
During today's meeting, we talked about industrial, scientific, technological, and economic areas, as well as tourism and other subjects that are covered by the 25-year agreement.
And this may explain why Iran's president will be going to Russia to cement the 20-year agreement with Russia. It's a high-level trip in which Iran's president, Ebrahim Raisi, was invited by Vladimir Putin personally to come there. Now, as of the recording of this program, the visit will be taking place, which we will be covering next week. All right, let me introduce our guests for this section. We have the pleasure of having Masoud Barat joining us here in the studio. Thanks for coming, an international affairs analyst and a sanctions expert. So it's a pleasure to have you. And also we have Dmitry Zolotarev, a journalist and foreign policy analyst. Welcome to you both. Dmitry, I'm going to start with you. We're looking at Iran gearing up to do trade without the dollar. Shouldn't say gearing up. It's doing that. It's already in motion. And you have countries like Turkey, for example, that Iran does trade with, non-dollar trade, up to a certain percentage, and establishing this China-Iran strategic partnership deal, along with one with Russia. Tell us what you think about that and what additional moves Iran needs to make in order to de-dollarize?
Well, Iran is making right steps and good moves to move away from the dollar. I think, first of all, Iran should build more close economic relations with Russia. Because, I tell you why, because Russia is a good friend, actually, a loyal country to its friends, and always holds to its word. So, which is very important. I'm not talking sentimentally. I'm talking just looking back to Russia's history. This doesn't matter which regime is currently right now in Russia, communist, tsar, or today's political structure. So Russia, I think, is the most reliable economic partner for Iran.
All right. You heard there from Dmitry Zolotarev. Masoud, tell us the relationship between sanctions and de-dollarization.
After the September 11 attacks, the U.S. proceeded to use its economic advantage, especially when it came to its banking sector, thanks to the status of the U.S., dollar being a world reserve currency used in world trade and world banking transactions. It used that to what is called the weaponization of the dollar. And this is what we hear a lot, that the U.S. has weaponized the dollar. And after 2001, when it began using the Patriot Act and began then using the dollar as a weapon, it sent out a message to other world countries such as Russia and China that something is happening. There is a change happening in the way the dollar is used. So they proceeded to devise ways to soften the impact of the dollar used as a weapon. The Islamic Republic of Iran became the target of the cruelest U.S. sanctions. An enormous volume of sanctions were leveled against Iran by weaponizing the dollar, which was unseen in history. Therefore, Iran has a vast amount of experience in being targeted this way. And as such, it can complement other big economies in the world that fall prey to U.S. dollar weaponization.
Very good. Thank you for that. And we're going to come back in our next section in depth to talk this a little further with you. Time now for our info news section of the program. By the way, we had so many suggestions that came from you this past week, so I'd like to take this time to thank you for that. It really helps the flow of the program. Well, first up, the U.S. and its oil reserves. It is diminished by a fifth. That's according to the latest. And this means that the U.S. used, according to the latest reports, 8.4 billion barrels. This was meant to keep the price of petrol low. However, that really didn't pan out the way the U.S. wanted to. It had a friend at OPEC, it thought, Saudi Arabia, but it did not come to its rescue. Additionally, throughout the year 2020, just 3 billion barrels of crude oil reserves were discovered in the U.S., so that's not good news for the U.S. Next up, U.S. inflation. Consumer prices, they have surged by 7% over the past year. Housing and food prices have continued to soar, but something even worse could happen. Prices rising as the economy slows. And that is the textbook definition of stagflation. For a definition check, here is stagflation in case you don't know what it means. On to the UK economy. UK economy bounced back from COVID shock. At least that's what it was, according to the latest, indicating 0.7% increase. I don't know if you can call it a bounce back, but Omicron has slowed down the economy. After a V-shaped recession, variant's impact will put the brakes on with a double whammy that's due in April. That's what analysts are saying. So the UK economy looks like it's going to slow down based on the latest wave of Omicron, which has hit that country pretty hard. Countries across Europe, actually, are experiencing the same. And then Africa's economy. Growth recorded in the second half of 2021. That's because the vaccines were being available. The vaccine hoarding was done already, making that available. It's really sad at the same time how promising this is, because you had, when the vaccines were available, the growth started to appear, and you had sub-Saharan Africa, for example, recording a growth of 3.5%. Just imagine if the countries that hoarded the vaccine made it available earlier. Okay, that's all for this InfoNews section. The stories were all the ones that you sent to us.
You're listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
Trade without using the dollar, de-dollarization. Is that even possible? Well, that's a question that has been floating around for a while. I'm sure, or maybe most may have heard about this. But the challenge, the petrodollar system. Now, what is this system? Well, a petrodollar is a U.S. dollar that is received by an oil producer in exchange for oil. Today, all global oil transactions are settled in U.S. dollars. Now, there are advantages to that for the U.S. in many different ways. In essence, it's actually something that the U.S. reaps twice. It receives a double loan out of every global oil transaction. So, first, oil consumers, they're required to purchase oil in U.S. dollars. And then the second advantage, the excess profits of oil-producing nations are placed in U.S. banks. Basically, these are government debt securities that are held in these banks. Got that? So that's how the U.S. reaps these benefits twice. Now, let's look at China, the world's top oil importer. China is not happy about oil being sold in dollars. It sees it as the only logical that oil should be actually priced in its own currency, the yuan. And what it has done, it wants that currency, the yuan, to be gold-backed. So at least this way, you have something that secures it, because with the dollar, it's not that way. Now, in order for China to reach this goal, it needs to ask other countries to actually trade in oil. So we're looking at how this will involve countries like Iran and even Saudi Arabia. This would create the new petro yuan and then weaken the dollar significantly. Again, these are all under the umbrella of moving away from the dollar or de-dollarization. China sees moving away from the dollar as a necessity and a priority to reduce the dependency on the dollar, and it wants to limit its exposure to U.S. currency risks in order to shield it from U.S. sanctions, which is another reason why it wants to move away from the dollar, along with other countries that it does trade with. Now, if China is successful, the world could end up trading oil primarily through gold-backed currency. Now, isn't that something to look forward to? Well, here you have a question. Could U.S. sanctions and closer West Asia ties fuel the rise of China's petro yuan? That can happen when China secures long-term energy deals with West Asian nations in order to increase the international use of the currency. And of course, the use of petro yuan has gained traction as Russia and Iran, which are subject to U.S. sanctions, look to limit the dollar exposure. Let's discuss this a little bit further. Dmitry Zolotarev is a journalist and a foreign policy analyst who rejoins us for this. Dmitry, welcome back. So Russia moving against the dollar, we know that. It has adopted a credit card, actually, in one of its moves, and it also is involved with BRIC countries. You have the fact that Russia has announced a financial payment system with China in which the infrastructure is set in place. Do you think that by Moscow and Beijing joining forces, they will be able to bypass the U.S. dollar as they have promised to do?
Well, I think it is possible because joint efforts within Russia and China are never attempted if they don't have perspective and background. So this is just a question of time, because moves like this are not made in an instance, and they take a lot of effort, economical, political effort, and they need restructuring some economic processes and economic relations, should I say that. So I'm pretty sure it is possible, and a few countries are working with Russia on the question. And I think within maybe next decade, we will see good results.
All right, Dmitry Zolotarev there. Let's continue the conversation with Masoud Abarati, who's here in the studios with us. Masoud, let's continue where we left off. Again, your expertise is sanctions and dollars, so expand more on that for us if you can.
دلار به عنوان منبع اصلی قدرت تحریم‌های آمریکاست.
The dollar is the main source or tool at the hands of the U.S. because the dependence of the world banking system is so heavily dependent on the dollar. Big international banks especially need to work with U.S. banking and financial institutions, and they need to touch the dollar. So when this power decreases, the sanction effectiveness and power of the U.S. decreases as well. In other words, the power of this weapon decreases. But how does this happen? On the one hand, the volume of the dollar that are used in financial transactions, if is lessened, then that chips away that the strength of the dollar and the need for the currency. Our discussion is the multilateral financial transactions between countries, including bilateral ones, like China, Russia, BRICS countries, Iran. So when bilateral trade increases, like in the case of Iran and Russia, and exchange is done in national currencies, it can decrease the strength of the dollar. Another factor increasing the strength of the dollar is since the dollar ringed as the top currency, other world currencies were converted to the dollar, creating its own market. Yet, for example, if we were to take Korea's money or Europe's euro, that market is not that large. So if other currencies were not converted into the dollar, its power would decrease.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Very good points there. A pleasure, Masoud Barati, international affairs analyst and sanctions expert. Thank you for joining us here in the studio.
There was a major announcement made recently about a new joint financial architecture between Russia and China. Well, this would be a major breakthrough in many areas, which may explain why sanction-hit countries like Iran are keen on having an economic alliance with these two countries. And yes, it involves de-dollarization. Russia and China said they will develop what they have called shared financial structures. Of course, the stated goal is to deepen their economic ties, but it also cancels out economic influence of any foreign states. Regarding this, Putin's foreign policy advisor said, "We mean creating an infrastructure that cannot be influenced by third countries." Leaders of both countries have also called for bilateral trade using national currencies. Well, in order for something like this to actually happen, there needs to be enough trade between the two countries. Is that the case? Looking at China and Russia's trade volume, here it is evident that their trade has increased significantly in recent years, approaching $200 billion. In another move to steer away from the dollar, the People's Bank of China has been regularly reducing the country's shares of U.S. treasuries. China is still the number one foreign holder of the U.S. sovereign debt, but it has cut its shares to the lowest levels since May 2017. And finally, China has taken away another major spot from the U.S. It has become the largest trading partner with the EU, and that plays a role in the EU moving away from the dollar. Here you can see EU imports and exports. The total value of EU-China trade came in at $709 billion, beating the US, which came in at $671 billion. And why is that important? Because the EU, like Russia, China, and Iran, is also keen on steering away from the dollar. The key point here is that the US dollar has been the world's major reserve currency for decades. But that status could come under threat as very powerful countries seek to undermine its importance. China, Russia, and the European Union are some major movers behind this push. And one of those reasons driving their shift away from the dollar is the prospect of being subject to US jurisdiction if they transact in dollars.
So we don't know what's going to come next, but what we do know is that the current situation is unsustainable. You have a growing club of countries, of very powerful countries, and the major movers are China, Russia, the European Union, that have a strong motivation and a stated motivation to de-dollarize. And part of the reason is the use of extraterritorial jurisdiction by the U.S. You're subject to extra U.S. jurisdiction if you use the dollar.
And that does it for this section. Thank you for following The Economic Divide. From me, Mahdi, it's goodbye until next week.
The U.S. dollar dominance has been waning for years. China just recorded $2.6 trillion U.S. dollars in its cumulative turnover of crude oil futures in 2021. Imagine that figure. Now, with Iran signing its mega deal with China and also one with Russia, the Iranian president, Ebrahim Raisi, is in Russia to cement that 20-year agreement. These countries understand that in order to fully reap the benefits of financial transactions, they need to bond closer together in order to de-dollarize themselves, which they have been doing. And by doing so, they take away the lure of the dollar and its appeal. That does it for this edition of the program. It was great having you on board. For Mika Vitahwe and the entire team, it's goodbye. Until next time.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is your host Musa Al-Bahadili and you are now listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program we discuss problems, issues and other relevant questions parents have regarding the Islamic upbringing of their children. As usual, all of the answers provided in this program are mostly based upon the holy book of the Quran and upon the narrations of the Prophet and naturally of the household of the Prophet, peace be upon them all. Joining us in the studio is our dear friend and Islamic researcher Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi from the Islamic Seminary of Qum. Dear Sayyid, I welcome you and Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaykum as-salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us, dear Sayyid. Today we will hear again, and for the final time, be talking about how we may raise our children Islamically in a good way of upbringing, without at all employing any means of violence, because as you said multiple times now, any form of violence in Islam is not condoned. Last time we spoke about we should show our children, for example, positive emotions, because we said children are very sensitive, especially when they are growing up, and to help with their worry and all the hormones going haywire inside their bodies, it can do some good to show them that they are safe, to show them comfort with their parents. And lastly, we also said that it's very important that we should work on creating a bond of respect that goes both ways between the parents and the children. Dear Sayyid, what other manners must we employ to avoid violence when raising our children?
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajeem. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajah. Again, as we begin with our previous episode, we said that violence is condoned in Islam in all ways, shapes, and forms, with anyone, and especially with children.
Right.
Now, having that in mind, then me and you, we face a hurdle that we have to get over, is how do I and you raise our children without resulting to hitting or using violence.
Right.
So we mentioned many things that we find helpful and useful and work when dealing with children and teenagers, amongst of which is putting laws in place. At least they say 4 to 5, not more. 5 basic but enforced laws.
In the home, you mean?
In the home, yeah, with the children. So the children learn the concept of rules and the concept of government and the concept of authority.
Right, constitution and rights and so on and so forth.
So, for example, you make it a law in the house for the child to always say thank you.
Right.
You make it a law for the child to say always please.
When asking for something.
Yeah. Right. Or you to make him always go wash his hands before food.
Right.
So, and he needs to uphold to the child, like you have to enforce it and you have to make sure the child is actually used to it. And so this takes a bit of time for it to become a habit.
Yeah,
so obviously it requires a lot of patience from you. So for example, I've always made a rule in my house that when the kids finish eating, they have to say thank you to their mom.
Right. So we should make these rules to encourage discipline, mm-hmm. in essence. And with that in mind, let's go ahead and take a quick break.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Today we are talking about how we can raise our children in a non-violent manner. Please pick up where you left off.
We were saying just before the break that we need to put 4 to 5 laws and enforce them. So obviously begin with simple, easy, doable for kids. Like I said, as simple as saying thank you, saying please, or taking your shoe before you get into the house.
So they shouldn't be complicated rules.
No, just simple ones that they can do.
Right.
And obviously it has to be things that you also do. You can't ask them to say thank you and please and you don't do it yourself.
Of course, yeah.
Right, so that would be hypocrisy.
Of course.
So if you see that the kids, they, you know, master these 5 and then now they do it naturally without you being telling them and stuff, maybe you can add another one or two.
right,
and keep increasing. So the basically right. all you're doing is you just increasing a good behavior in them.
You're teaching them how to be upstanding citizens.
Exactly. So you don't overburden them with rules and regulations, and you don't want to let them loose either.
Right.
So it's a work in progress, which, like I said, requires a lot of patience and a lot of perseverance.
Of course.
All right. So this is also one of the means that